Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. If you're new to my show, I'm on every Wednesday at 9, and you can visit the show blog for more information, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. If you want to find out more about KUCI, you can visit us at www.kuci.org, and we are on socials at KUCI FM. So standing by to kick off the show is Clayton Page Aldern. He's written this great book, The Weight of Nature. Aldern is a highly accomplished journalist, a self-described recovering neuroscientist with master's degrees from University of Oxford in both neuroscience and public policy, and a Rhodes Scholar and Reynolds Journalism Institute Fellow. Currently, he is a senior data reporter for Grist. Aldern has written for The Atlantic, The Guardian, The Economist, and more, and his work has been presented on the floor of the U.S. Senate. In his new book, The Weight of Nature, Aldern shows in three parts how we are unknowingly changing along with the environment, its effects on our cognition and behavior, its actions on our physical brain health, and its subtler influence on sensory systems, culture, and language, and how we must emphasize with and react to the world as it exists now, while also collectively preparing for an ever-changing future. He is with us right now. Welcome to the show, Clayton.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Congratulations on your book.
It is out there in the world.
Fantastic. When did it come out?
Yesterday.
Yay. Oh, that's right, April 9th. I put it on the show blog. How does that feel? How long did it take you to work on this?
Oh, gosh. Something on the order of 6 or 7 years at this point. And so it is a huge relief for it to no longer be inside my head and instead be a thing that people can hold in their hands.
Yes. Yeah. I know, when I'm a writer as well, when you really, really want to get something out and then you finally do and it's on paper, you feel a sense of closure and excitement because it's, you know, I don't know about you, but you probably woke up in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning and that's all you think about.
Oh, yeah. And frankly, that's probably still going to be true for a while.
Why is that?
You know, this is material that isn't going anywhere, mm-hmm, right? This mm-hmm. is a book about the manners in which a changing climate changes us, right, from the inside out. And you know, that's another way of seeing it, is a book about the environment. It's a book about this soup that we are always in, and it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. I was actually down at the Pacific Marine Mammal Center, and they were talking about how the mammals are getting cancer from the DDT that was dumped in the environment in the 70s. And when I looked at your book, and I thought, you know, a lot of us go through life. You know, we don't realize the impact. So walk us through, you know, the book and how, you know, certain topics really were important for you.
Yeah, no, happy to. I think actually the DDT and cancer example is a useful one here because it's one of those instances in which you have this surprising effect arising from some kind of environmental stressor. And yet, when you think about it for a little bit, you kind of say, well, of course, you know, here's a chemical to which, in this case, animals are being exposed.
Yeah.
Of course, there might be an unintended consequence of that exposure. And this is a book about unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the behavioral changes that people and animals experience in extreme heat, right?
Yeah.
People are more aggressive when it's hot out. We're not as good at problem solving. You know, we're more impulsive thinkers. So there's a lot of neuroscience underlying why that's true. That's in the book, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also about the manners in which a changing climate will increase the habitable range of brain disease vectors, like ticks and mosquitoes and bats. And so because these animals that cause brain diseases in people have more places to live in the world because those temperate climates are becoming warmer,
mm-hmm.
I mean, people are going to be experiencing those brain diseases at a higher rate, you know? And so, again, it's I think, an intuitive effect when you think about it, and yet it requires paying attention in order for us to wrap our heads around it. So mm-hmm. so it's all of that. It's all the manners in which climate change is kind of seeping into our brains. It's affecting us at the cellular level. It's affecting us at the level of the individual, right? The decisions we make, the manners in which we think, and it's affecting the manners in which we relate to one another. There's a societal effect here.
Yes. Yeah. Got a lot of cause and effect.
Indeed. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you brought up ticks because I spent time living in Connecticut growing up. I remember how humid it was. And one time I went fishing and I found a tick on me and I was frantic. But I do have a couple of friends and people I know who have Lyme disease.
Yes.
Which is horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it's one of those diseases that unfortunately we can expect to see a lot more of as global temperatures continue to rise.
What is your first thought when people say, oh, climate change, there's, you know, come on?
Well, listen, I am a firm believer in the science here. I have no problem accepting the scientific consensus that people are causing the change in climate around us. And yet, I think one of the points I want to make with this book is that we actually don't really need the idea of climate change to understand the relationships between the environment and the brain. Mm-hmm. You know, climate change is in this book because it is that which I think is cause for paying attention to these interactions, right? As the climate changes, we notice corresponding changes in our brains. But there's nothing special about the fact that this idea of climate change is out there. There's nothing special about the fact that temperatures are rising per se at a given rate or over the course of a given time period. The point is that everybody has a brain, and everybody with a brain is enmeshed in this environment around us. And the environment is throwing all kinds of stuff at our brain all the time, right?
Right.
It's throwing toxin exposures. It's throwing carbon dioxide concentrations. It's indeed throwing temperatures at us all the time. And really, I think the point of this book is to just pause and think about the manners in which, as people with brains in the world, you know, we're kind of part of a grand experiment here. It's not the same thing as what neuroscientists do in a lab where maybe you have a rat and you expose it to some specific toxin over some specific time period and you really control the exposure and watch what happens. Instead, we're exposed to all kinds of things all the time over the entire course of our lives. And I'm encouraging us to take a look at what the results of that experiment might be.
Sure. Yeah. You mentioned the impact, you know, people at risk for ADHD. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, happy to. You know, so what is ADHD? This is a neuropsychiatric condition. This is a change in the manner in which our brains process information. It's a change in the manner in which we make decisions in the world, the degree to which we may be impulsive, for example, or distractible, for example. And one of the things we know about rising temperatures is that they act on our ability to make decisions. By way of example, if you pop somebody into a brain scanner and you turn up the heat, you'll notice that the kind of rational deciding parts of the brain aren't as good at quieting the more emotional and impulsive parts of the brain. And so that really resonates in terms of people's experiences with impulsive, distractible decision-making in the heat. But you know, to the question of ADHD in particular, one of the things we're also seeing is that exposure to trauma, and by trauma, I mean an environmental stressor like a hurricane
Katrina,
or a wildfire, right? Something really extreme. Exposure to trauma in that manner can be a trigger for something like ADHD, something like the likelihood of developing ADHD. And unfortunately, this isn't even something that you need to necessarily be alive to experience, right? If an expecting mother experiences something like a hurricane, the probability that her unborn child will develop ADHD later in life skyrockets, you know, something on the order of 20-fold. So it's some really, really shocking stuff that I think we're not paying attention to.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Clayton Page Aldern. He's written this great book, came out yesterday, The Weight of Nature. You know, I always wondered about the origins of ADHD, and you're touching on a really interesting point. So you're saying that mothers, you know, they're pregnant, and babies in utero can end up with ADHD potentially because of the stress and trauma on the mother.
Yes. Yeah. And this is what's known as epigenetic inheritance. It's not necessarily that the genome of the child is being changed. It's that specific genes are being turned on and off because of the types of environmental exposures that the mother may experience, right? And so, you know, you can kind of think about it as a stress response almost. And stress is a good thing, right? We actually want to be able to inoculate ourselves against stress. It's a good thing in some sense for a mother, as they're expecting, to be somewhat stressed insofar as the types of hormones that we release in our bodies under stress, things like cortisol, right?
Right.
Those are the types of hormones that the fetus is going to be exposed to as well. And a little bit of cortisol is the kind of thing that can effectively help us build a greater, more resilient stress response within ourselves. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that everybody has a breaking point, right?
Yes.
And if people are exposed to such extreme trauma that they have these huge cortisol storms, right, at any point in their life, including in utero, right, that's the kind of thing that can push people over the edge. And
right.
and that's the point at which you see an aberrant stress response. It's the point at which you see the development of these kinds of neuropsychiatric conditions.
Well, it makes so much sense. I mean, you talk about low-income parents in New Orleans post-Hurricane Katrina, and I think, what about post-pandemic moms who had children and what they lived through with COVID? Let's say you were in New York City, March 2020, and you were pregnant.
Yeah, right. And I think, unfortunately, what you're suggesting is absolutely correct. You know, I can't speak to the coronavirus pandemic per se, but, you know, one of the really compelling studies that is out there in terms of the relationships between stress and the unborn, you know, comes from New York City and Hurricane Sandy. And you know, the situation you had there is a researcher was studying the relationships between stress and pregnancy, and they put together this cohort of hundreds of expecting mothers that they wanted to follow throughout the course of the pregnancies and then follow up with the children as the children grew up. And then Hurricane Sandy rolled into town.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And so the researchers asked this question of, gosh, well, we already are tracking effectively these expecting mothers. But what's the difference between a child that was in utero during Hurricane Sandy versus a child that was born, you know, just before the storm or conceived after it? And then they had a decade worth of follow-up with these kids after they were born. And again, you know, it's not just about the fact that you may have a mother experiencing something like post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's that as early as preschool, the children who were exposed to those kinds of environmental stressors in the womb, the rates of anxiety, depression, conduct disorder, ADHD, they're all increased by something on the order of, you know, 20 to 30 to 40x what you would expect in the general population.
Yes, I certainly believe it. And I don't know if you're that familiar with the mental health crisis, but how much it was exacerbated by COVID. But we don't yet know the long-term effects of what people experience, what they live through. And then these kids, these, as you mentioned, these young kids experiencing trauma and everything that was associated with COVID.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the nose there with this idea that we kind of don't know what to expect, right? Because we're living in this experiment in real time. You know, I was on the phone with a neuroscientist the other day who thinks a lot about neurodegeneration, stuff like dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And there's this really unfortunate but compelling relationship between air pollution and these types of dementias, and this relationship between neurotoxin release from blue-green algae blooms and these types of dementias. But the thing is with those diseases is that you can have an exposure to some kind of environmental stressor very early in life, but then not see the resulting disease manifest for decades, right? And in part, that's because it's never just one thing that causes those diseases. It's the combination of many things over a great period of time. And so we can point at something like a blue-green algae bloom, which, by the way, is becoming more and more frequent with something like climate change. Mm-hmm. We can point at it and say, hey, the evidence base here suggests one of these blooms is one of the most compelling causal risk factors for something like ALS. And yet, it's not like sitting next to a lake once, breathing the air next to a toxic algae bloom, is necessarily automatically the next day going to result in you catching ALS. It doesn't work that way.
Yes.
But what it does mean is that your risk of experiencing this condition is dramatically increased, and over the course of your life, you have a greater predisposition to coming down with it. And so, again, to your point, we don't know what is going to happen, right? We don't know what the effects, what the cumulative effects of these exposures are. It's really true. And what this neuroscientist was saying is, you know, I think that we're in this grand experiment together. We know that there's some pretty awful stuff going on. But unfortunately, by the time we all look around and say, oh gosh, we should probably do something about this, it might be too late for some people.
Right. It's like a runaway train.
Yes.
Yes. What can people do, especially, let's say, Gen Z, because they're very focused on the future and social activism? What can they do to get involved in, you know, addressing this crisis?
I think the first step is becoming aware of it, right? And that's really important to me because, in part, we're talking about a really intimate bond between nature and people, right? There are a lot of scary things that we've discussed on this call, right? And at the same time, I think it offers us reason to pay attention to, frankly, what is a very porous boundary between the world out there and the selves inside us. And I think recognizing the porousness of that boundary, recognizing the manner in which we are together enmeshed in this environment around us, that we're not somehow separate from it, that's actually the first step toward what I would like to call planetary empathy. That's the first step toward reckoning with the fact that we are in this all together. And in fact, we are in this all together with everything else that's out there. It's not just about people.
Yes.
So you know, what can we do with that? I think there are a couple things we can do with it. I think, for example, cultivating a practice of mindfulness actually really matters, right? This is the notion of being able to name and acknowledge our experiences, being able to sit with a kind of mindful presence and recognize what is happening to us and be able to move on accordingly, right? I think mindfulness as an idea has, you know, somewhat of a new agey kind of highfalutin connotation these days, but there's a lot of really compelling hard neuroscience out there that suggests those types of practices of kind of presence and awareness and acceptance, those are exactly the kinds of things that, you know, for lack of a better phrase, we can use to rewire our brains for the better.
You bet.
You know, and yes. So I think sitting with our own reactions, noticing how it is that we respond to stressful environments, to environmental change, to all kinds of exposures out there, noticing the manners in which we do respond in perhaps a manner that we wouldn't prefer to, that's the first step toward changing our behavior.
Yes, thank you for that. And the other thing I will say before we wrap up is for any students or anyone really to get involved in purpose-driven initiatives that focus on our environment. You know, for instance, like I said, the Pacific Marine Mammal Center, next week I'm featuring my interview, they're going to talk about how they bring in volunteers. So getting involved in things that can help us would be wonderful.
Yes, yes. And because, right, at that point, you are part of the solution. You're not just part of the problem. And
right.
And even if you're not a fossil fuel company or a fossil fuel exec, you know, more to the point, who's out there kind of burning away our habitable future. As we've discussed on this call, right, you're still implicated in all of this. You are a person alive today enmeshed in the environment. And so as somebody who is not separate from all of the zaniness out there in the world, you know, I think it's kind of incumbent on us to
Definitely.
Be a part of the solution as opposed to a part of the problem or merely some kind of, you know, passive recipient of
exactly.
stress who then gets stuck inside and doesn't want to leave one's house.
Well, and you bring up a good point earlier about mindfulness, being aware, being mindful of the environment, also how you're living your life, you know, whatever you're ingesting. I mean, we don't yet know the long-term effects of vaping.
Right.
What that's going to mean for a whole generation of people.
Right. And you know, I don't think it's incumbent on individual people to solve this big thing we call the climate crisis,
yes.
right? That's the responsibility of government and companies and industry. But you do have a certain kind of responsibility to protect yourself in some capacity and to foster a kind of resilience in yourself in some capacity because, you know, the government isn't going to do that. And
right.
so you've got to look out for yourself and I think that means, you know, paying attention to the world around us. It means thinking about the manners in which we're connected to one another, the manners in which we are connected to the environment writ large, and accepting those relationships with a kind of grace and a kind of presence and, you know, thinking about the impact of one's actions on the world. And, you know, again, for the sake of this conversation, the impact of those actions on yourself.
Right. Now, listen, I know you have to run, but I want to mention Earth Day is coming up, April 22nd, and I would love for you to give out your website, how people can find out more about you and your book.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, the website is claytonaldern.com, A-L-D-E-R-N, and the book is The Weight of Nature, How a Changing Climate Changes Our Brains, available presumably wherever you can find books, but you'll have to maybe Google around to ensure that I'm not lying to you.
No problem. And I put all the information on the show blog, and I'll mention it to listeners. So I know you've got to run. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Take care. That was Clayton Page Aldern talking about his new book, which came out yesterday, The Weight of Nature. He's a neuroscientist turned environmental journalist, and his book is out now. Again, you can find out all the information about Clayton on my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And if you want to find out about being a guest or you have a friend or a colleague that would be a great guest, you can shoot me an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E. That's the hard part. J-A-N-E-A-N-E at kuci.org. And I would love to direct you to our website. If you're not familiar with KUCI's eclectic mix of public affairs and music shows, you can visit www.kuci.org and our socials are KUCI FM. We will take a little break, and then I'm going to have another guest at the bottom of the hour, Dr. Greg Chasen, author of Flawed, Why Perfectionism is a Challenge for Management, and the book is coming out on the 16th. And if you visit the show blog, there's more information about Dr. Chasen, and if I'm mispronouncing his name, I will double check when I bring him on. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.